you guys. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick, and as we've done for the last 35 years, starting in 1982, I think it's 35 years, we run the tech net at this time. The technical net is possibly one of the longest running nets under one leadership. And it's also probably one of the longest nets in the total number of hours on the air, which is, I think, over 6,000 hours, 5,000 hours. The main reason for the technical net is education. Curious radio amateurs who are curious about many areas of science, physics, wireless radio in particular, will gather here, ask each other questions, and most of the time they get answers. And the answers they get are reasonably good. As far as the hit record is concerned, nothing's perfect. The material is to some degree peer-reviewed in that all of the tech nets for the last 10 or 11 years have all been recorded. Let me drop. They've all been recorded, and they appear on a website, which you can get to by going to amateurradio.tangovictor. Amateurradio.tangovictor. Choose the right year of the last 11 years, the right month, the right week, and you can play back all 4 hours of the TechNet. It's usually 4 hours, 8 o'clock to midnight, if we have enough enthusiasm to go that long. And most of the time we do. When we do make mistakes, which occurs very rarely, of course, someone reviews that material, brings it to our attention, and we bring it to your attention that, hey, we made a mistake on that one. Any engineer, any scientist, has to admit that no matter how hard he tries, he has a certain batting average. No baseball player bats 1,000. That means he gets a hit every time it comes up to the bat. Well, no engineer, no scientist bats 1,000. If you're really good, you bat the high percentages of correctness, but never 1,000. You have to admit that there's going to be some error, particularly if you're investigating a new area. If you knew it all, then you're not doing an investigation. That's the only way you could not make any errors, so to speak. And even then, people make speech errors and spelling errors and punctuation errors. The main subjects of the TechNet are usually ham radio related, but not necessarily. Lately, we've been getting into... we got an awful lot of positive feedback from people who really wanted to know how the New York City subway system works. Or how does that 650 volts at 5,000 amperes for each individual train, how does that get onto the tracks? How does that power distribution system work? How does that train control its speed and acceleration and deceleration and energy management, dynamic braking, and dynamic acceleration and so on, and the communication systems that are associated with that? We got an awful lot of positive feedback on that. We got pretty deep into that subject for the last couple of weeks, which of course doesn't please everybody. We got so deep into that subject that some other questions didn't get answered. But if you signed in a previous week, and for whatever reason we didn't get to you, that puts you high on the list the next week. So you get an added advantage the next week if we didn't get to you. Okay, now's the time to sign in. Give this group of people, which is Dr. Roy, AC2GS, who usually handles a physics and science question, Paul, WS2N, who gives us the space report, and Dick, K2RIW, who tries to act as the moderator, interlocutor, as they used to say in the vaudeville days. You give us your call letters, your name, because you're signing in because you do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in just because you're listening. We don't have to spend the time doing that. After 35 years, after something like quite a few thousand individual TechNets, 1,680. This is the 1,680th TechNet of the series.
Repeater, timeout.
Of the series that began in September of 1982. So after all those years, after 1,680 TechNets, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven anymore. But if you do have a question or a comment, please give us your call letters and your name at this time. K2LAW listening.
This is KC2 Queen Yankee Whiskey. Name here is Joe, and yes.
K2LAY, Joe, yes.
K2MU, Bernie, yes.
Okay, we got Joe number one, Joe number two, and Bernie. Will your call letters Whiskey Alpha 2, Mike Uniform?
Negative, Alpha 2, Mike Uniform.
Okay, you said negative, and then you repeated Mike Uniform, so I'm confused. Are your call letters, Bernie, Whiskey Alpha 2, Mike Uniform? Squeeze the mic, wait a second, and then give us the information, please. Okay, I didn't hear from Bernie again. So we've got Joe, and Bernie. Anyone else to sign in? Because you do have a question or a comment for the TechNet. Please give me your call letters and name right now.
And WS2N, Paul, checking in with the space report. Good evening, Dick. Good evening, Roy, and everybody else.
Very fine, Paul. We'll be giving a space report number 280. And somewhat space related is the December issue of IEEE Spectrum. If you're an IEEE member, you get the Spectrum magazine, the monthly magazine, IEEE Spectrum, on page 24, I think it is, no, 26. There's 8 consecutive pages on the subject of the 1 kilometer array. What's it now? Whole kilometer array. It's a huge radio telescope being built in Western Australia. That's going to be the largest radio telescope ever built. It's going to take quite a number. It's under construction right now, and as they build portions of it, they're using it as they add more and more elements to this great big phase array, square kilometer array, SKA. As they add more and more elements to this phased array. It's getting bigger and bigger, higher and higher in gain, higher and higher in sensitivity, stronger and stronger in directivity. So it's going to be doing some awfully good work. And it's going to take decades for its absolute completion. And it's in a very quiet area of Western Australia. So we'll be maybe discussing a little bit of that. And Dr. Roy has got quite a number of very challenging science and physics subjects that he's able to discuss. So his problem is which one to choose, because they're all so deep and interesting. Okay, we're going to go to Joe first. KC2, Quebec Yankee Whiskey. What would you like to talk about tonight, Joe? K2LAW and the TechNet.
Yeah, roger that. Yeah, Dick, you know what time Paul's coming on for the space report? Yeah, I missed the space report last week. Back to you, Dick.
Well, unfortunately, we put Paul at the end, and therefore he quite often comes on at 10:30, 11 o'clock, like numbers, kind of late. However, everything he said is on that recording at amateurradio.tangovictor. But if you've got a question from previous week that's a holdover, so to speak, why don't you give us your question right now, even though it's a space report. KC2QIW, the microwave voice of Harrison, New York. You've got it, Joe, K2IW.
Yeah, roger that, buddy. At this time, I don't have any new questions, and everybody's coming in loud and clear, and I hope my audio is making it into the repeater. And back to you, Dick.
You have a nice strong carrier. You're essentially dead full quieting. Your audio is exactly the right amplitude. And I can hear you on the input as well as through the repeater. So you're sounding good. So, what is your question for tonight that you signed in with, Joe? KC2QIW. K2LIW in the deck net.
Yeah, guys. You must have misunderstood my question. That was my question about the space report. So, yeah, you answered my question, and thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, I think what you're really telling us, Joe, left-handedly, is that because Paul comes on so late, because it's you got to get up and go to work tomorrow morning, I guess that's a little bit of a conflict for you to stay up that late. Maybe, this is not fair, but maybe you're going to have to take a nap in the afternoon on Sunday so you can stay up a little bit later Sunday night. I know for people to change their schedule that way is not easy. Next person on the list was Joe, W2RYY. Go right ahead, Joe, K2RIW.
Good evening, Dick. How are you? Did you receive the pictures I sent you? That's part of the first question. That would be related to the question I'm going to ask you.
The answer is yes, so go right ahead.
Okay, what kind of propagation conditions would, I should really clarify that. What kind of meteorological conditions would have to exist to have a propagation opening on UHF to allow a television reception of a transmitter approximately 330 miles away? And I sent you 340 miles away, line of sight. And I sent you a picture of verification. I did receive that station back in September on RF Channel 14. And it's an extreme rarity because I've been looking to try to get that station, and it only occurred once. I can see the station on the air as far as, like, signal level, but it's, like, about minus 95 to minus 100, typically, if I put the antenna to the north. This particular time, when the band became enhanced in that direction, they were coming in as strong as about minus 65. I was able to get picture lock and other header information on the receiving television apparatus. Back to you.
Yeah, your last submittal to me contained three pictures. Two of them were the tuning network of the final stage of a high-power, a high-frequency or VHF amplifier. But the first picture was the picture you got from, I believe it was Vermont, on digital television. And the main portion of the picture was the square in the middle, which is the control panel for your particular down converter, your digital television down converter, and that control panel. Let me see that again here. It's got indications on it for auto tuning, and it's a little bit blurry, but it looks like a control panel. In the background, I guess, is the actual television broadcast, but that square in the front, was that really what was being sent by the Vermont UHF television station? And you probably told me, but I don't remember right now, what channel number was that, RF channel number. Over to you, Joe, W2RYY, K2RIW in the second hand.
Well, if you ignore the fuzziness of the picture, because I took that real quick with a camera, and I may have moved the camera slightly, or maybe I was too close to the television screen off the CRT television to take an accurate, clear picture, let it focus properly. But if you look at that, you know, the square, that's the control panel of the converter. That's not what's being sent over the air. What you see behind it was simply whatever program material they were broadcasting at the particular instant time I was receiving it. And I pushed the control panel button, which will allow me to look at the RF channel, and then you can look at the header information on the control panel, which tells you the DTV picture of their header information. In this case, it was RF channel 14, and it was DTV 5.
Yeah, in the upper right-hand corner, it says select RF channel number, and then crosshatch 14. Below that, I can't quite read the... I guess I'm looking at the call letters of the station. And there's a bar chart indicating signal strength. And the gold portion of the signal strength bar looks like it's about 15% of possible signal strength. And then the most right-hand part of that, little dimmer and then bluish, looks like it covers about 60%. So I'm kind of amazed that digital television will give you a picture that is fuzzy. But as you explained it, that it was a handheld camera shot, and therefore that's the fuzz that I'm seeing, I guess, is your hand holding. It's not the actual picture itself. To be there isn't a way of grabbing one particular frame. But to answer your original question, stand by. Go right ahead, Eric.
Yeah, no, I just find it very interesting that he's picking up a 14 because we've got so many commercial users on 14 and 15 around here. Almost all the way up to 20, so. My hat's off to him that he's actually got a locked picture.
Yeah, he's got a pretty high television aerial at his QTH with a rotator. So my guess is his rotator was aimed to the northeast, and the directivity of that antenna pattern was rejecting some of those other directions. He probably had to jiggle the azimuth setting on the antenna rotator back and forth so that the local commercial channel 14 RF emitters were in the notches of that antenna pattern, and that's what gave him a good enough bit error rate so that he got demodulation. That's a bunch of guesses on my part. Now, to get that many miles, I'm reasonably sure channel 14 is 470 megacycles, 470 to 476. That's well into the UHF region. Let me drop. Similar to the 432 ham radio band, but it's a little bit higher. And you don't get quite as dramatic a super refraction effect there as you do on 10 gigs, but still, you do at certain times of the night in particular, beyond midnight, when the atmosphere is cooling off, you get a higher humidity down low and a lower humidity up high. And air with high moisture content has a higher dielectric constant. So you get the slower velocity air down low, higher velocity air up high. That gives you a downward bending of the propagation. And when the ratio is such that you get a downward bending that follows Earth's curvature, they call that the super refraction effect. And so a signal hundreds of miles away can be as strong as if it was being emitted from your backyard, because the signal is being bent vertically following Earth's curvature, and therefore the signal is falling off by inverse linear, not inverse square. It is being spread in, the signal is being spread in azimuth and elevation ordinarily. That's why it falls off by distance squared. But when it's only being spread in azimuth and being focused in elevation, that's what super refraction is doing for you, you get inverse linear. And so, under those conditions, if the atmosphere was steady enough for a long enough range, you could easily hear a signal 1,000 miles away. That's probably why, in the old days of analog television, people would occasionally see television signals from as far away as Chicago. Back to you, Joe. WHYYY, KGYYW in the TechNet. Wait for the beeps.
Well, the funny thing is, Dick, that it seemed to occur at that distance, and I was only able to copy one other station coming from that locality on a different RF frequency. I think it's over the same tower, but I couldn't get picture lock. I just got header information from it. It's just tickling the converter, but it wasn't strong enough to give me a picture lock. But the funny thing is, there are stations close to that on other RF channels which I have got reception of, like a RF 40 from somewhere around Mount Palm, and a northwest corner of Massachusetts, which is much closer, didn't get that channel. But this is like jumped completely over. The only other time I've got something about that far away is copying another station on RF 19 from Syracuse, New York, a couple of years ago. But that was also under very strange conditions. The conditions you're talking about, the band openings, typically I can see them occur in about mid-spring, mid-fall, up and down the coast very easily. You'll get a warm day and it cools off quickly at night, and the TV's open, wide open, going up to the northeast and southwest very easily. but getting something directly north of the azimuth for that location of that transmitter is something like 015, 018 degrees. So I was sort of like rejecting all the stuff on the side from New York City, which is populating the same frequency with a lot of commercial broadcasting.
That signal you were copying from Vermont, by way of his channel number, and you probably could look up the right spreadsheet and find out what town they're in. Do you believe they were in southern Vermont, central Vermont, or northern Vermont? How far up in the state? Because the state is probably a couple hundred miles from bottom to top. So, total number of miles. Once you know the latitude and longitude of the station, you can calculate the exact number of miles. And it's a good number of miles. And the biggest variable here is that, do you have this weather condition throughout that whole path? And so, there are times when only a portion of the path has the right weather condition, so you get kind of a skipping effect. When you were aimed at that Vermont station in Channel 14, as you rocked your antenna back and forth in azimuth, my guess is you couldn't move the antenna very far before you lost that signal, which means other interference was coming out of the notch at some other direction. Other signals in that near frequency region would give you co-channel interference. So, correct me if I'm wrong, was there only a small number of degrees where you could rock that azimuth antenna rotator and start to pick up that signal? And for roughly how long did you see that signal, Joe? W2RYY? K2RYW in the TechNet?
I'll answer the last question first. For a period of about 45 to 50 minutes, and then the conditions faded out, the signal level went down, and I lost picture lock, and finally it just wasn't there anymore. You couldn't get it. But about 45 minutes in time was. Moving the antenna back and forth about 30 degrees, I could still see the picture, but I was start to lose lock because it probably is something coming off the side of the antenna pointed towards New York, because there is a lot of commercial stuff on the in the same frequency band and other stuff on the line that operates in that frequency band also, so, you know, who knows. But I was just lucky enough to have that signal coming in strong enough to be able to receive it. And I knew the strength of the signal because I looked at it with a spectrum analyzer at the same time, and I could measure the intensity. When I point the antenna north, I can always see the carrier from this particular transmitter. It's always there. But it's typically about -95 to -100. Never got a picture lock except for this one time. And I know it's coming from the north because I rotate the antenna to the east, to the south, and so forth. The carry will basically disappear and go down to the north. You can't see it. It's not even visible anymore. So I definitely know I'm looking at something coming up from that area. The call letters of the station is WPTZ. The studio's in Burlington, and they are transmitted on top of one of the high ski mountains in the northwest part of Vermont.
Yeah, I guess that could be the mountain that's called the Mount Stowe, Vermont, and I can't think of the name of that mountain. The mountain's got a name. I skied that mountain, but lots of years ago, and I've forgotten it. WPTZ, official site, and when you go to their website, they've got a weather channel, national news, local news, and so on. So it looks like a pretty nice channel. Oh, and Wikipedia tells you a lot about it. Let's see now. Sure enough, it's Channel 5. It's branded as Channel 5, even though it's RF frequency channel 14, 470 to 890. Their slogan is covering the Champlain Valley and beyond. Dare to defy. It says digital channel 14 UHF, virtual channel 5, PSIP, whatever that means. and has got a subchannel 5.1, 5.2, and 5.3. NBC. VCW and MeTV. So they're an NBC. They're an NBC affiliate. I'm getting some music from them when I go to their channel. What time of day were you seeing this, and how long ago was that event, Joe? Go ahead.
I was back around the end of September. I think there's, if you look at the bottom right-hand corner of the picture I sent you, that should be the date and time stamp on the camera picture itself. It's somewhere around September 21st or something like that. It was about 9 o'clock-ish at night, maybe 9:15, 9:20 when I took that picture. I had the camera, pretty much just like in the next room, and I figured, well, this is a good reason to have a camera sometimes. A picture's worth a thousand words. I've never photographed a DX channel before, so like that, instead of just copying down a paper, I decided to take a picture of it so I'd have a good record of it, especially for, being able to send it in to you so you could view it and say, yep, you definitely got the station.
Mount Mansfield. I'm familiar. That's where Stovermont is, I think. What's confusing here, Joe, is that in the lower right-hand corner, in golden lettering, it says 09/18/2017/21:54. So September 18th this year, 21:54, which is 9:54 local time, I presume. And that's nice and clear. And yet the rest of the picture is a little bit blurry. So I'm a little bit confused as to, you took a photograph and you believe the camera in your hand was moving. Ah, yes, I see what's going on. The picture you took, the camera printed that picture onto the frame, so to speak, and it didn't come through the lens. That explains it. I was trying to figure out why the date and time was clear and the rest was a little bit blurred. Now we know. You must have quite a collection of these photographs you've taken off the screen. And too bad there isn't a slightly more sophisticated way of doing that. I bet you've got quite a file of photographs of television DXing. What is your longest television DX on digital television and or analog television to date, Joe? The B2RYY, K2RIW, and the TechNet.
Actually, I've taken very few pictures. I took another picture I have elsewhere in the camera stored for RF Channel 2 when I was watching MeTV come up all of a sudden one night, and it came through on RF Channel 2. And it turns out it was a very good band opening down to a station in the south end of Delaware. The farthest DX station in digital TV format that I have recorded was out in the middle of Nebraska on RF Channel 4, I believe. Either RF Channel 4 or RF Channel 5. I got it in my paper records. Didn't have the camera. I had the camera, but I wasn't thinking about it to be able to record the thing. I was able to get the header information and see a picture for like enough of a time when it opened up. But that was a very good band opening when that happened. Since now the lower channels are populated by low power and high power channels on RF Channel 2 and 3 and 4 is from Atlantic City, the amount of band openings I've seen lately from way out of state on the lower channels is like zero. Could be conditions, could be because of the local interference prevents me from seeing something out of state. But the answer question is about the middle of Nebraska or so. That's the furthest one. The second furthest one from that is Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah, we're talking about 1,500 mile type ranges here. That's a lot of distance. Now, in the old days of early television, 1950 time frame, of broadcast television, recordings were made by putting a camera in front of a cathode ray tube. I forget what they called that process, but Eric's going to clear that up for us. And then pretty soon, the kinescope. Kinescope, sure enough. Now that we got digital television, although this is a dumb-sounding question because this is not something I'm familiar with, Eric, what's the easiest way that Joe could go the next step where he would electronically record the picture directly as opposed to doing a kinescope recording. What's the next best step? I should know and I don't know. Are there digital television video cassette recorders? Probably nowadays, I'm pretty sure it's done with a hard drive. So there's probably a way of setting up a hard drive to record what is being broadcast to you. Give us a couple words on how you would go about doing that, Eric. K2EJ, K2RIW in the second hand.
K2RIW, K2EJ. There's actually a very simple method. You go out and you buy a, it depends whether you're using a Mac or a Windows machine. If you're a Windows person, you go and get a Hop Hog TV tuner stick, and that essentially records your stream on your hard disk. And it plays it back, keeps it in the ATSC form. You can actually export it and do a lot of things with it. I can't think of the name of the manufacturer right now. There's another company that makes a dongle that'll actually let you analyze the stream. They've got software. Actually, there's some software that'll work on the Hop Hog stuff. If you're a Mac person, there's iLegato. There's a bunch of them. They're pretty cheap. Just dongles that plug into the USB port. It's got an RF connector to hook up to your antenna. And it's got the tuner and the display and everything all set up to go. If you happen to have DirecTV, there's a way to do that. Of course, they want to charge you money for it because they encrypt it. But hard disk, that's what we do. Actually, the broadcasters don't use tape anymore. It's all on hard disk. They essentially record the compressed stream. If they're just doing play out, if they're doing production, they actually record the voice stream.
B2GXM.
GXM recognized. Get to you in a second. Eric, you said the word Hop Hog a couple of times. There is a company on Long Island which I think was called the Hop Hog Computer Works that made various interesting chunks of electronics. Do they still exist? This dongle that you talked about, which allows you to make a recording onto a hard disk. A little bit confused now. I guess the dongle gets plugged into your laptop, your desktop computer, and it does some kind of a reception. How expensive is this thing? And I guess it's recording onto the hard disk of your main desktop computer. Is that true, Eric? K2EJ, K2RIW?
That's correct. Hop Hog Computer Works, they've got stuff. That's the name is lowered like $49. $79, $69. You can buy them at Micro Center. You can buy them online. You get it from Amazon. There's some Chinese ones. I haven't kept up with who's making what, but there's a lot of them out there.
Okay, the next person who signs in, I should know him, Mr. GXM. I think it's the call letters I just heard. Give me the full call letters and your name, sir, and then proceed with your question or comment. GXM, RIW.
H-Y-W, Whiskey Bravo, 2 Golf X-Ray Mike. Thanks, Dick. Eric, is Canopus Software one of the companies that will do this recording to disk? I believe they have dongles and software. WB2GXM.
Canopus Box takes video. Didn't take off.
QGXM out.
Okay, that was Richard, WB2GXM. Alrighty, anything else you want to tell us, Joe? You're the last, oh no, we got Bernie. If I can get Bernie to come back, he's going to be right after you. But anything further you want to tell us about this, Joe? WB2RYY, K2RIW, the TechNet. By the way, when it comes to people doing television DXing with digital television on Long Island, do you know of any other human being of the 2.5 million people on Long Island other than you who is doing this? Is that a joke?
No comment?
No, I don't. It might be you, but you don't want to put a rotor on your antenna so you can have plenty of fun, because I would imagine at your altitude and the line of sight coverage that you have just television reception-wise, you'd do wonders if you had a rotor on your antenna. Well, you know, so I guess I'm it.
Yeah, I've got a nice high tower and a nice high piece of land. and I should go pursue that, but it just hasn't bubbled to the top of my priority list. Somebody said they want to make a comment. Please sign in, give us your call letters, and go right ahead with your comment.
Tommy.
Yeah, and I heard another comment in there too. I will recognize for this that you come to the KC2 SHO, John in Los Alamos. And I was wondering if the company that I was wondering if the company that the other gentleman was trying to think of was DeckCheck. They make some interesting products, but also if you go to company called DVEO, that's Delta Victor Echo Oscar, or computermodules.com. He sells all kinds of interesting items, and I don't know if he still sells this card, but I have one here that you can record direct to transport stream. I don't know if the Hub Talk stuff will let you do that with my hearing, whether it could or not, but I've had these cards for a long time. They're unfortunately just sitting in a box now, but you can record the transport stream, break up the transport stream at that point. With their software and with other software, do all kinds of interesting things. So I want to go back and check that site to see if they still sell this card. It's called, I have trouble remembering the name of the card now, but probably only 20 feet away from me, I could go look. But it is like a more prosumer if you want to take it to another level. K2RW, KC2, SHO.
I'm about to turn it over to Eric for comments on what you just said, John. And John, when you come back to us, your audio could be 3 dB louder. You're a little bit low. Good, clean audio, but a little bit low. KE2EJ, for comments on what you just heard from John. KE2RIW, go ahead, Eric.
Hi, I wasn't listening.
Okay, John, repeat your question for Eric. You got it, John. KC2SHO with a little more audio. KE2RIW on TechNet.
WKC2SHO. The short of it is, does the HubPod solution or any of the other dongles you were discussing, do they allow you to save the transport stream? And I do have a card that I bought from DVEO, or also known as computermodules.com years ago, that would let me record direct to transport stream. And also, I was wondering if you were the other company you were trying to recall earlier, if that was DeckCheck or not. I'm not sure if they make a tuner, but they do make lots of interesting transport to train utilities. K2IWKC2SHO.
You've got it, Eric. Wait for the beep.
You're going to have to help me out here, Dick. My ears aren't working too well. I'm not sure I understood what he said.
John, is there anything you can do to turn the audio louder? That would help. KC2SHO for a repeat. K2RIW in the TechNet.
I'm just getting closer to the mic. The same radio I normally use, so not sure what the issue is, but is that better?
Slightly better, although you're at the threshold of making square waves on the first stage of your audio. But the way your audio is being connected into the EchoLink or IRLP, whichever you're using, that gain channel seems to be a little bit low. So we're hearing audio from you that's, let me pick a number, 6 dB lower than the audio you're hearing me from right now. So try one more time. Speak slowly at full volume, and let's see if Eric can understand what you're saying. KC2SHO in Los Alamos, K2RIW in the TechNet on Long Island.
Yeah, I am transmitting from a different position. I don't know if that's causing any issues here, but okay, real quick, one more time. Do the HubPod devices allow you to record to transport stream? And I do have a PCI card here that is a receiver from DVEO or computermodules.com that allows you to record direct to transport stream. Really nice card. I had a lot of fun with that a long time ago, and perhaps they still offer it. Also, was the other company you were trying to think of, was that DeckCheck? They do make some interesting transport stream equipment, but not sure if they make a DTD tuner. hope to cut through that time. If not, no worries. We can discuss it another time when I have a better situation. K2RIW, KC2SHO.
Let's see if Eric was able to copy at that time. And if not, I guess he could send it to us by way of chat room, email, or whatever. KE2EJ, I hope the copy was a little better this time, Eric. K2RIW in the TechNet.
All right, I get the drift of it. I think I know exactly what he's talking about, although I'm not absolutely sure. He's talking about either he's got a card or a dongle from Devo. They actually make a whole lot of stuff. They make, for all different broadcast standards, they make cards that are capable of taking an RF and producing a transport stream. Those products are really intended for the broadcaster and industrial commercial users. It actually records the transport stream on dishes. Most of these devices do. They don't actually say, oh, I'm just going to record the video and audio. They actually record the entire stream, and the metadata that pulls out the actual stuff that you're interested in, and some of them will actually truncate the stream, leaving just the material that you tune to. What specifically his question was about it, somebody's going to have to help me, because it's not him, it's just my ears. Devo is very actively in business. You can go to their website and look up all their gear. K2RWK2J.
Now, when I pass it back to you, John, not only is your audio a little bit low, but when I listen to the frequency response, there is almost nothing beyond 1 kilohertz. Higher than 1 kilohertz, your audio sounds like it's been through a low-pass filter. Nice, clean audio, but the high-frequency notes are missing, and therefore interpreting the low-amplitude words is not easy. Some of those words that are missing, maybe if you spelled them out or sent them phonetically, it would help. KC2SHO, Los Alamos, K2RIW on the TechNet.
So my hearing rolls off at exactly 1,000 hertz, so, you know, if he produces more than 1,000 hertz, that would help me.
I think it would help. even though you have attenuation up there, still, the way a human brain separates the words is to listen to the sibilance, the high-frequency notes. KC2SHO, K2RIW, go ahead, John.
Exactly what I don't hear.
I hear you. Pun intended, you got it, John.
Yeah, I don't know what I can do about it right now. I'm outside working in the driveway. Other than transmitting from a different position, I am not not doing anything different with my node or the radio that I use. So maybe the node needs a reboot or something, or maybe this radio doesn't like the cold night. I'm not sure. But let's not worry about it for now. I think I got my answer that the Hotbug equipment can record the transport stream, which is something at the time that I bought the DVEO card that no other manufacturer was doing, so this is definitely come around, if that makes sense. All right, thank you very much for allowing the comment and the answers from Eric. K4IW, KC2SHO, I'm going to go back to listening.
We throw one more thing in.
Go ahead, Eric. And Eric, you're sure that Hot Pod Computer Works is still in full swing, a good, viable company?
Yeah, they are. They make a lot of industrial stuff. They're not going anyway.
Devo actually makes some software that allows you to extract the transport stream and analyze it and see which packets are audio, which packets are video, which packets are PSIP, which packets have the WARN system. There's something called A1, which is part of the National Emergency Alert System. There's a whole lot of stuff in there. They make software that allows you to take it apart, look at the PCR jitters, and all sorts of interesting stuff. So if you happen to have it, that can be a lot of fun looking at, although you can be scratching your head an awful lot trying to understand it.
Eric, do you believe that Hot Pod Computer Works is in the process of engineering and designing equipment that will be ready for the ATS-3 new format digital television that we're going to get in the next year or two? Do you think that they'll be ready in time for that? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Uh,
As far as I know, they actually have something, and of course they're waiting for the finalization of the format. They're pretty much ahead of the curve most of the time, but I'll look it up and see what they have to say about it.
Okay, that would be appreciated. There was another person who said he had wanted to make a comment. Who was that person? Please give us your call letters and your name. Go right ahead, sir. K2RIW.
This is KC2, Clean Yankee Whiskey. Name here is Joe. Yeah, Dick, how many repeaters do we have in New York? And my question is, are those repeaters also like shared on the same towers with cell phones?
Joe, your question has got about three levels of ambiguity to it. When you said how many repeaters, are you talking about 2 meters or 450 or both? When you say New York, are you talking about the tri-state New York City area, or do you mean all of New York State? So, and even then, it's not going to be an easy question to answer, but what frequency bands are you talking about? DMR? Are you talking about DMR repeaters as well as non-digital repeaters? What are you really looking for? Computer guide, ARL publishes a guide. I don't have one right here. Can't think of the name of the damn thing. But they publish a guide that lists all the repeaters and all the bands listed by state and then by town within that state. So that's the easiest way for you to get an answer. I don't think anybody here knows whether or not the number of repeaters in, let's say, the New York State area are the number of repeaters of 35, 350, or 3,500. They probably don't know that, but you can find out real fast from that repeater guide. KC2QIW, K2RIW, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, Roger that. Yeah, I'm talking about 2 meters only in the whole New York State.
Okay. Does anybody on frequency have a guess as to how many 2 meter amateur radio repeaters are in New York State? Give me a guess if you know. And by way of my remembrance of the computer guide, of the repeater guide, which New York State goes on for about 3 pages. And I'm going to guess there's about 30 on each page. I think we're talking about almost 200 repeaters. That's my guess. Let's see if anybody on frequency has got a better guess than that. K2RIW in the TechNet. Yeah, I think the best answer you're going to get is either the right website or the repeater directory. And the latest issue of the repeater directory from ARL lists 99% of all of them. Some of them are unlisted, but and they don't end up in the guide. But the vast majority of them do. That's about the best I can suggest to you, John. Correction, Joe. Let's see if I can hear Bernie. Bernie now, Whiskey Alpha 2, Mike Uniform Blank, K2RIW. Go ahead, Bernie.
Okay, it's Kilo 2, Mike Uniform, K2 Monkey's Uncle. Are you copying me okay, Dick?
Yes, I'm copying you very well, Bernie. What was happening before is that either your PO is a little bit low and the machine is slow to pick up or whatever, and you were talking very fast, so therefore I kept hearing 2MU. I kept missing the prefix. The prefix wasn't coming through. This time, the Kilo 2 Mike Uniform. Go right ahead, Bernie. We're hearing you very well right now.
Okay, great. So I'm on an HT in an apartment, but I'm not too far from the repeater. And if I sit in just the right position and don't move, it seems to work. So I'm glad you're hearing me okay. And my question also has to do with, I've been playing around with the over-the-air reception, DTV, And I got to thinking, I was, now in the old World Trade Center, there was that big antenna, that big vertical antenna. As far as I know, TV is horizontally polarized, right? So now what is being used to transmit that horizontally polarized signal? Was there, let's say on the World Trade Center or now on the Empire State Building, are there beams set up and then, you know, they're getting omnidirectional beams? I'm just curious about how it just appears that the TV transmitters are verticals and we're all picking it up on horizontal antennas. Back to you, Dick.
Bernie, you'll get a beautiful picture of the broadcast antenna if you Google the word bat wing antenna, B-A-T wing antenna. It's one of the names that's used for it. It's a kind of a turnstile antenna that if you looked at it top view, you'd see the mast in the center, and you would see something sticking out to the north, something sticking out to the east, something sticking out to the west, something sticking out to the south. So all four quadrants have something sticking out from top view, as if it was a turnstile antenna. When you look at it side view, each of those things sticking out is literally a bat wing shaped object. And quite often there's a pair of these things stacked on top of each other. The bat wing gives you turnstile-like operation, pure horizontal polarization, and quite a bit of gain because of the vertical stacking of a pair of these bat wing things. I am guessing the vertical beamwidth on VHF channels is something like 30 degrees, even though in azimuth it's covering all 360 degrees, and rather pure horizontal polarization. So, bat wing antenna, that's what you had at World Trade, that's what you had at Empire, and that's what you're also going to have at the New World Trade. So, it's a broadcast, let me drop.
Actually, we don't at the New World Trade.
Okay, give us some words. By the way, you probably have a much better description of what I'm calling a bat wing antenna. So, tell us anything about the antennas on any of the buildings. You've got it, Eric. Eric is our local broadcast engineer for Channel 13 in New York City and Channel 21 in Plainview, Long Island. KE2EJ, K2RAW. You got it, Eric.
K2RAW, KE2EJ. They're actually called Delta Wings. Actually, most of the stuff today is all circularly polarized, meaning that it's there's both horizontal and vertical. And I'm looking up a typical Delta Wing to tell you what the gain is. The gain's not that good. A company called Dielectric makes them. Let's see what they say. Number of layers, two layers. Gain at channel 2, if we're talking low VHF, is only 4.8 dB. Maximum average power for that antenna is about 40 kilowatts. If we go up to, say, channel 13, the gain goes to about 24.2 dB. And then when UHF, they only go like to 16, they don't make them any bigger than that. What's going up on the World Trade Center won't be Delta Wings, they're actually panel antennas. And, actually, we're hoping to be on the air by January 3rd. Well, they're still not finished with it. They had enough trouble with the UHF bit above it. The Delta Wing actually is typically horizontally polarized. Stack them, you get more gain, you get a tighter beam. And generally, on a pole, what we do is we mount four antennas, one pointed east, one pointed north, one pointed west, and the other one pointed south. That's how we get the omnidirectional out of it. K2RAW, K2J.
I'm going to guess that on a lower VHF and upper VHF, a delta wing antenna is primarily horizontally polarized. It doesn't have circular polarized capability. It's only when you get up to the UHF channels, 470 megacycles and above, where you have the ability to make circular polarization out of a slot-like antenna, is my guess. Am I even close to right on this one, Eric? KE2EJ, KQIW.
No?
Go back a few years, you're absolutely right. Technology marches on. These panel antennas actually have individual horizontal and vertical elements, so that's how they do the circular. And there's a phasing harness that puts one 90 degrees apart from the other.
Roughly what year did they switch over from horizontal polarization to circular? And is every upper and lower VHF, as well as UHF, is everything broadcast today circular polarized, or only some of them circular polarized? So what year and what percentage are circular polarized? Over to you, Eric.
Can South Top.
No, I don't know specifically what year. It's been a lot of years, actually. Although the standby antennas on Empire, like Channel 9 and when they were on 9, that was actually, it looked like a horizontal beam. There were four beams sticking out from the bottom of the mooring mast at their building. Let's see. The old World Trade Center, the FMs were circularly polarized. They looked like a turnstile antenna mounted sideways. Yeah, it's been around for a while. It's not something that new, but what they're doing up at World Trade is a newer type of design. Of course, they're in panel. Think about, you know, the frequencies that they are and the size of the elements are pretty interesting.
Is almost everybody CP today, Eric?
Well, let's put it this way. Everybody that went UHF is CP. There are still some horizontal only bees around.
Fascinating. It's a lot easier to list the ones that are not CP because essentially everybody is. And nowadays, except for Channel 7, which I think is still on its VHF upper channel, 7, 9, and 13, I think are today still VHF. Almost everything else in the metro area is really UHF. Isn't that true, Eric?
Yeah, Channel 3 is coming from Four Times Square. That's 3 VHF, RF. That's circularly polarized. 7 at Four Times Square is circularly polarized. Although they're not on Empire. And when they move to World Trade, they'll be circularly polarized. So the bees that are operating here right now, which is going to change, is, let's see, we got 3. We got 7, we got 11, and we got 13.
Channel 7, ABC Television, I think is now on Empire. From what you just said, they're about to switch over to the New World Trade. Make a guess as to when will that take place? This coming January?
Question.
Yeah, well, the VHF antenna isn't ready, otherwise we'd be transmitting right now, so the opportunity will be there. Although I haven't been up there in a few days, so I don't know what their story is yet. You know, CBS is there, they're ready to go, but they're UHF. NJU and NBC, of course, they're operating full-time. They're on the very upper set of antennas at the moment, because the next set of antennas, the last I heard, still wasn't ready. So, as I told you, they had phasing harness problems, and so I think they're just about at the end of that now. But I don't know for sure.
The person who said he's got a question, please give us your call letters and name. Go right ahead, sir. K2RIW. My name is Dick.
So KC1 Sierra Alpha Mike. My name is Sam. My question is, I guess for Eric, when a transmitter station switches from only horizontal to circular polarization, does that mean that there's a little less signal going horizontal because it has to be dispersed in a different polarization?
The transmitter power output is pretty much dictated by the Langley-Rice surveys that are done. So when you go from horizontal only to circular, you actually get, the FCC allows you
X percentage increase in power based upon the pattern that's created, who your neighbors are, how much co-channel you're going to make, et cetera, so on and so forth. So